The following podcast is in the public domain. Welcome. I'm Peter St. Andre. Today is Wednesday, February 8th, 2006, and this is the first installment of One Small Voice Audio Edition. For my inaugural podcast, I've chosen to read a poem I wrote perhaps a dozen years ago, entitled Ancient Fire. This is the most literary, some would say pretentious, of the poems I've written, so I'll follow the reading with a bit of commentary. Sing me, muse, of your bright sister, small and dark, they say she was, though I shall never know her. Her song is lost, yet even her merest shards are a vibrant spark. She is like a god to me who sang that song of love for what one loves. A pagan was she whose Christian fate it was to burn, her art cut short when night grew long. Misguided faith I can forgive, but to lose the greatest of the poets whose song should live, I cannot bear, I can but pay her homage. Sappho, be my muse. This poem is my homage to Sappho, and it is an homage at many levels, from its form, to its theme, to its choice of words. As to the form, the poem was composed in Sapphic meter, in which each stanza consists of three lines of 11 beats each, followed by one line of 5 beats. Unlike most of Sappho's poems, and ancient Greek poems in general, this poem rhymes. Specifically, in each stanza, the last beat of the first line rhymes with the last beat of the fourth line. Small and dark, vibrant spark, sang that song, night grew long, but to lose, be my muse. Each stanza also features interior rhymes, of the 7th or 8th beat in the first line with the last beat of the second line. Your bright sister, never know her, a god to me, a pagan was she, I can forgive, whose song should live. There are various other poetic tricks here as well, such as the alliteration in the first line. Sing me, muse, of your bright sister. My favorite of these poetic tricks is the enjambment of lines 7 and 8, where the phrase cut short is literally cut in half across the line ending, though this effect is more visual than auditory. Yet Sappho was more than a mere poetic technician. She is in many ways the poetic embodiment of the flowering of individualism in the 7th century BC, a time the classicist A.R. Byrne called the Lyric Age of Greece. In contrast to Homer, Sappho celebrates the individual voice. Her muse is no longer Calliope, the muse of epic poetry, but Erato, the muse of lyric poetry. She sings not the stories of all Greek society, but what I call the song of what one loves. Consider this fragment from one of her poems. Some say an army of horsemen or footmen or rowers is the most beautiful thing over the coal black earth, but I say it is that thing, whatever it is, that one loves. Because we moderns are all individualists at heart, we find these thoughts natural, but they were far from natural in the 7th century BC. What we find foreign about Sappho is not that hers is an individual voice, but that hers is a pagan voice. She seems to experience a kind of direct, personal relationship with the Greek gods, and many of her poetic fragments take the form of prayers, often quite demanding prayers, to Aphrodite, the goddess of love. I too assert a kind of personal relationship to Sappho. Indeed, she is like a pagan poetic god to me, a phrase that I borrow from another fragment from among her poems. He seems to me equal to the gods, who sits across from you and hears close by your sweet voice and delightful laugh, which used to shake the soul within my breast. Unfortunately, these brief quotations from Sappho's poems cannot do her justice, because they are my own poor English translations, not the glorious original Greek. And glorious was her Greek. Sappho's fame was so great in ancient Greece that even Plato, who was no great lover of poetry, called her the tenth muse, an idea that I evoke by referring to her in my poem as a bright sister of the muses. One of the great crimes of literature is that Sappho's song was lost. Whereas the ancients knew 10 books of her poems, today we possess only one complete poem and a number of fragments. How did this happen? It appears that in late antiquity or early medieval times, her poems were either studiously disregarded or actively destroyed because of her pagan outlook. As I put it in the poem, her Christian fate was to burn. Thus, in contrast to Horace, who proclaimed that life is short but art is long, the truth of Sappho's artistic life is that her art was cut short as well. And our loss includes not only the words but the music, for Sappho was a true lyric poet who accompanied herself on the lyre and either sang or chanted her words. It is Sappho's combination of poetry and music that makes me choose her as my muse, for at the time I wrote this poem, I was quite active as a songwriter. And although my songwriting output has diminished, I continue to think that the art of writing songs and singing them is the most personally integrated of all the arts, an argument I've made at greater length in an essay entitled "The Individualism of the Poet-Musician." Well, that's a lot to pack into 3 stanzas, and I apologize for this somewhat narcissistic exegesis of my own poem. But now that I've explained some of the imagery, I hope the poem has more meaning for you. Sing me, muse, of your bright sister. Small and dark, they say she was, though I shall never know her. Her song is lost, yet even her merest shards are a vibrant spark. She is like a god to me who sang that song of love for what one loves. A pagan was she whose Christian fate it was to burn, her art cut short when night grew long. Misguided faith I can forgive, but to lose the greatest of the poets whose song should live, I cannot bear, I can but pay her homage. Sappho, be my muse. I'm Peter St. Andre. Thanks for listening.